May the words of my mouth and the meditation of all our hearts be now and always acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. I take the text from the first reading, Hebrews chapter 2, verse 18. Because he himself suffered when he was tempted, he is able to help those who are being tempted. So, and also in the gospel reading, we had an account of how Jesus was tempted in the wilderness after his baptism. And I'd like to take that into the background for this sermon and talk a bit about temptation as it might affect us too. One way of beginning the preparation of a sermon is to take one word and put it into a search engine and see what comes out. So I put the word temptation into Google, and what do you think came out? Well, the first thing that came out was something called the Sweet Temptations Patisserie. The Sweet Temptations Patisserie, it really sounded quite attractive, actually. I've got a sweet tooth, so I might have stopped at that stage. All it was tempting, really, was that we might have a bit too much sugar or saturated fat. Seemed to me it wasn't taking temptation all that seriously. So I went on, I clicked on one of the other entries. This was a little bit more alarming. It was something called Temptation Island. I don't know if any of you have been watching Love Island, but it was rather like that. It was a it was an American reality TV show, anyway. And the idea was that you got couples who are committed to each other, and you took them off onto this island where they would meet a whole lot of very attractive people of the opposite sex. And this was actually, I suppose this was meant to be harmless fun for the audience of millions who would be watching. But it struck me that this was actually not taking temptation that seriously either. It's turning it into a game. And that doesn't seem to me to be the right attitude to take temptation at all. Well, we live in a society which probably doesn't take temptation terribly seriously, but they take a rather different approach to the subject. So another way of beginning the preparation of a sermon is actually to turn to the Bible, or strictly to turn to a concordance. A concordance is like a dictionary to the Bible. And so I looked up temptation in my concordance. And for that, I got some Old Testament readings, which I want to share with you a bit. First one I want to mention comes from the book of Proverbs, a book which I must admit I don't spend a lot of time reading. I don't know whether you do, but chapter 7 contains the story of a foolish young man led astray. Let me just read a bit of it to you. I'm missing out some of the really juicy bits. At the window of my house, I looked down through the lattice, and I noticed a young man, among the young men, a youth who had no sense. Then out came a woman to meet him. With persuasive words, she led him astray. She seduced him with her smooth talk. All at once he followed her, like an ox going to the slaughter, like a deer stepping into a noose. It doesn't actually say what happened to him, but I'm sure he didn't come to a good end. I think the theme that runs right through the book of Proverbs, and particularly in this passage, is about wisdom and self-control. Wisdom and self-control, and I think this is relevant to our own temptations, that in order to resist temptation, those are the Christian virtues that we need, wisdom and self-control. And with those virtues, we can resist temptation in all its forms. So that was the first Old Testament passage I looked at. The second one, you might have guessed, is the story of Job. Job is a book I do quite often read. I think it's a very moving account of the sufferings of a righteous man. Job, you may recall, had a very good life and had a lot of wealth, good family, and good health. Satan persuaded God to tempt him by taking away all these things that he was enjoying in his life. So first of all, he lost his wealth, he lost his children, and then he was actually covered with painful sores from the soles of his feet to the top of his head. It sounds terrible. But the message that comes out of the story is that Satan actually underestimated the righteousness of Job. Job was possible, even when all these good things had been taken away from him, he still kept a good relationship with God. He said these words, which I'm sure you've heard before, "The Lord gave and the Lord has taken away. May the name of the Lord be blessed." So the theme of the book of Job is essentially the virtue of patience. And I think we have to recognize that the tempter, as described in the book of Job, is very active still in the world today. Many of us will have experienced some of the travails that are described there. He talks about people reduced to poverty, about sad bereavements, and about painful disease. I think the temptation implicit in all this is that we cannot understand why we are being treated in this way. Job didn't know what was going on in this dialogue between Satan and God up in heaven. But although he didn't know, he recognized that he was still subject to God, and he was tempted. Job was tempted by this to dislike God, to feel that God was his enemy, and that's a temptation which we may, on occasion, all feel ourselves. And then the third and last of these Old Testament readings. Again, this may not surprise you, but I found the story of the Garden of Eden, which is a story about the knowledge of good and evil. As you probably remember, the tempter is the snake, who comes in the first instance, he tempts Eve, then Eve tempts Adam, and hence the fall. It goes like this. "The woman said to the snake, 'We may eat fruit from the trees in the garden, but God did say, you must not eat from the tree that is in the middle of the garden. You must not touch it, or you will die.' 'You will not certainly die,' the snake said to the woman, 'for God knows that when you eat it, your eyes will be opened, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil.'" So there's the temptation, perhaps the greatest temptation of all. The snake says we can become like God. And this, of course, is to deny God's authority over us. That's really, I think, what tempted Adam and Eve, was that they were going to be able to free themselves from the authority of God. When they knew good and evil, they would be able to make up their own rules. And they saw that as freedom. It would be for them as if God did not exist. And that, I think, is the form in which the temptation faces people today. They stop believing in God. They stop believing in God. I'm not talking about people who have philosophical, historical, scientific questions they want to ask. That's perfectly legitimate. I'm thinking rather about doubt as an emotional reaction against the authority of God, a rejection of God. So it is a problem not in the head, but in the heart. That is when we can reasonably describe doubt as being a temptation. We feel that God's existence is an emotional burden that we want to be rid of. And to resist this temptation, we need another Christian virtue, the virtue of humility. We have to admit that we need God to guide us, that we need his love and his judgment in order to make sense of our own lives. Well, this is the Old Testament. I'm turning to the New Testament. We come into the temptation of Jesus and how it relates to our own. It says in Hebrews, Jesus was tempted in every way just as we are, yet he did not sin. In every way as we are, but he did not sin. I don't know if you remember, some years ago, people were very shocked by a film called The Last Temptation of Christ. Some years ago, I don't know whether any of you saw it or even would remember it, but it was a very graphic film, and the point of it was that in that film, Jesus was actually being tempted in his relationship with a woman, with Mary Magdalene. It was all complete make-up. But in a way, I think, although I don't want to recommend the film particularly, I think what I would say is that it's perfectly reasonable to attribute to Jesus in his earthly life all the temptations of which we might be subject and of which we might be ashamed to feel. But my guess, he felt them too, tempted in all ways as we are, yet without sin. So he needed self-discipline and patience, just as we do. He faced our weaknesses and overcame them. What we've heard about this morning was Jesus in the wilderness, and these are rather special temptations that he felt because he had identified himself through the voice of God at his baptism as being the Son of God. And so there were special temptations that he faced in that role, not the sort of temptations necessarily that we feel. I'd also say that what we have in today's gospel reading is just an initial skirmish in what was a long drawn out campaign. It said at the end of the reading, if you noticed, that the devil went away waiting for a suitable time to come back. And I think that the most suitable time to come back turned out to be the Garden of Gethsemane. That's what I want to just have a brief word about. He could so easily have escaped. There was Jesus in the garden, and the soldiers, the servants of the high priest were closing in, but he could have got away. It was nighttime, he could easily have got away, but he didn't. He appealed to God, actually, to let him off. That, I think, is what we can only describe as a temptation. He was appealing to be spared the pain and the humiliation, just as we might in the same situation. But I guess there came a message to him from God, which said that this was a sacrifice that he needed to make. That was the reason why he had come to earth, why he had become incarnate, was that he should face this death. It's made clear in John's gospel, as well as the others, that is the message he received from God. And so he said, "Your will be done." There would be no legion of angels. There would be no Elijah to take him down from the cross. Your will be done. So, turning back to the passage from Hebrews, which was our first reading, because he himself suffered when he was tempted, he is able to help those who are being tempted. Well, I guess we can just think back about these Old Testament readings, and we can say how Christ helps us to resist the temptation of Job. And I think he does this not by explaining to us why we are suffering, but by suffering with us. Compassion, to suffer with. Sympathy also means to suffer with. And that actually is the best answer we can have to the voice that tempts us, saying that God doesn't care. God cares so much that his Son died on the cross, and he said, "Your will be done." I think Christ also tempts us to resist the temptation like that of Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, which, as I'm saying, I think is to us now a temptation to say God doesn't exist or to deny his authority over us. And the way in which God helps us in those situations is that we know that he is not banishing us from his love. He is not chasing us away, turning his back on us. Even though we may be disobedient and unbelieving, he comes to us. His relationship of love can be repaired because Christ comes to meet us, and that is what gives us the strength and the courage to resist the temptation. In Gethsemane, he said, "Your will be done," and he says that on our behalf, and he also enables us to say it too, "Your will be done." Paul said to the Corinthians, "God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. And when you are tempted, he will also provide a way out so that you can endure it." Let us pray that he will be with us in our time of testing and enable us to stand firm. Amen.